Hello there, this is Sheila Hamill and Andrew Ridgwick with New Day Dawning. You're listening to Hospital Radio for Northumberland and North Tyneside. Welcome to all our listeners, especially those in our local hospitals. Recently, I had the pleasure of interviewing the Right Reverend Christine Hardman, the 12th Bishop of Newcastle. Last week, she shared with us her spiritual journey so far, her love of the Northeast, and some of her favourite music. This week, we'll hear her response to some more difficult questions on hot issues of the day. Let's begin our programme with another one of Bishop Christine's favourite hymns before we continue listening to what she had to say in that interview. Here is Love Divine, All Loves Excelling. Love Divine or Love's Excelling, recorded there at the Keswick Convention, a beautiful hymn. And now we return to my interview with Bishop Christine, and I'm going to begin this week with the question which ended last week's programme, which led us on to speaking of wider issues. Bishop, perhaps you might permit me to ask a few political questions. Many Geordies believe that the government seems to think the north of England goes only as far as Leeds and no further. How might you be able to put the northeast of England on the map now that you're a member of the House of Lords?
Well, I think there is some truth, you know, in this belief about the government ending north of Leeds. I was looking at a list of the members of the new cabinet that Theresa May's formed. Mm. And as far as I could see, only one lives in the north. So I was really shocked by that.
Yes.
And I thought, how does then the experience of the north get into the political discourse?
Mm.
I am in the House of Lords because the House of Lords has passed a bill, and the House of Commons as well, actually, because they want women bishops in the House of Lords faster than they would be if we waited our turn.
Yes.
Because not all bishops are in the House of Lords. It usually goes in seniority. So Bishop Rachel of Gloucester and I have kind of leapfrogged a few of the male bishops to get there. I feel that my real task there, a prime task, one of my tasks, and most important of my tasks, is to bring the interests of the northeast into that national arena. I had the privilege of making my maiden speech in the Lords a few months ago now, and I was really keen. You get a lovely chance as a bishop to talk about your diocese. So I was able to say some such wonderful things about this wonderful diocese. But perhaps the most important thing I wanted to stress is that the people of the northeast are a gift to this country. The northeast is not a problem to be solved. Mm. It's a gift to be appreciated. And I think that we have so much to offer in terms of natural resources, in terms of people, and I will do my very best to continue raising awareness of this extraordinary part of the country.
Yes, and so many skills that are dying out.
Yes.
And we don't have the apprenticeships to go further with those.
The government,
kind of industries.
Part of our problem in the northeast is the low resource in our schools, actually.
Mm.
And because the Church of England obviously has a big responsibility for schools, as we noted last week, I'm very keen that we should work for resource going into education. The one thing that has more effect on life chances of our young people than anything else is the quality of the education they receive. London used to have a very poor education record. Resources were poured into London education, which was fantastic, and the scene has changed completely. We need that level of resource here in the northeast as well to make sure that our education system serves our young people and gives them the education they deserve.
Bishop, there have been many mixed emotions since the Brexit vote. People here heard politicians telling them that if they voted Leave, jobs would be lost. Well, they'd already lost their jobs here in shipbuilding, coal mining and ironworks. Jobs that were available were being handed over to a cheaper labour force. Also, more and more families were having to depend on food banks. Should we now as a people be anxious and fearful, or should we be excited and hopeful? How do you see the future?
Sheila, thank you. Yes, the Brexit vote was a huge thing for this country, and it's very clear that with the exception of Newcastle itself, the people of this diocese and the North East voted for Brexit. And I think that shows, as just as you've explained actually, Sheila, the level of hopelessness that people were feeling.
And the anger.
The level of alienation, a fact of being ignored, not having a voice, not being listened to, and the disappearance, as you say, of these significant industries. Interestingly, one of my grandfathers was a miner, and the other grandfather was a northeast steelworker.
Mm-hmm.
And so the story of the family actually has been part of the history of our communities. I think I personally I voted to remain in the EU. And I think, to be quite truthful, on a logical basis, probably in the northeast, we may have been doing better if we had remained with the subsidies, but we are where we are now. So there's no point trying to say, let's not listen to everybody, let's reverse it. We are where we are, and we must now make sure that we do the very best we can with the situation that we're in. Mm-hmm. We need to hold to account the promises that were made by those who argued for Brexit.
Yes.
And we need to say, right, now you must deliver on these promises. The people of the North East must not be betrayed by what now happens in the Brexit aftermath. The money does need to be continued to be spent and invested in this area. We need to be outward looking. We need not to be at all tempted into this. The really dark side of Brexit is where we behave really badly to those who are immigrants into this country. We need to be a welcoming country. We need to be outward looking. And I don't think we need to be like Pollyanna and kind of optimistic in that sense. But the Christian faith is about hope, deep hope, not optimism, deep Christian hope. And our task as a church in this Brexit situation is to speak of hope, human goodness, yes, of love overcoming evil in our context. And particularly we need to do that where hope is thin on the ground.
I couldn't agree more. A lot of people in this area feel a deep sense of despair and guilt at how little we're actually doing for refugees as a country fleeing from war-torn areas and the desperate state they're in. On the other hand, many feel fearful and very threatened at mass movement where terrorists could infiltrate our country and jobs also could be lost. How should we be responding to this dilemma as followers of Jesus Christ? And could the church be doing and saying more? Can the church still lead the way forward?
People's fear and anxiety about large numbers of refugees and migrants coming into this country is entirely understandable. Mm. And we need to be able to speak into that fear and not ignore it. But in the end, if we lead lives dominated by fear, we get trapped. Our lives become small.
Yes.
And our Christian faith teaches us that perfect love casts out fear. So it's seeing beyond faceless people whom we don't know and of whom we're a bit afraid, into seeing people as human beings, like us, and imagining ourselves in that context. Mm. There is some wonderful work being done in this diocese and in the North East.
I know, yes.
The warmth of people in the North East, actually. I've been so proud of our response to refugees here. Just one example, the West End Refugee Service in the centre of Newcastle, mm, are giving a wonderful welcome and helping people who come and feel utterly isolated and on their own, mm, some sense of love shown to them by others, by Christians and others of no faith and other faiths, actually. Mm. It's that lovely welcome. And, you know, most of us living here, at some point in our history, we have been, our ancestors have been migrants into this country. My husband's ancestors, for example, were Huguenots who were persecuted and, mm, came over here and fled and were accepted into this country. And this country has a proud tradition of accepting and welcoming those who are being persecuted. Mm. And I hope we will be able to maintain that. And I think the church is actually, we can always do more, but we're doing a pretty good job, actually. I'm really proud of our response.
There's the Walking With project in War's End too.
Which is amazing.
It's very similar to
which is fantastic.
East End project.
And now we're having some Syrian refugees. Northumberland hasn't had many refugees, actually, but some Syrian refugees are coming into Cramlington now. Mm. And again, the churches have played a good part in that welcome. And I hope we can continue to do that.
Yes.
And work with other partners.
Okay. Bishop, one of our younger listeners has asked this question. Perhaps you'd like to attempt it. He asked, why is the church so rich when there are so many poor people in the world?
What a great question. I don't know if you're listening, young questioner, but that's a really good one. Testing question. I can't really answer for the church worldwide, but the Church of England in its assets has considerable assets, largely owned by the church commissioners, who are the body who control that. Most of our assets are in our buildings, our church buildings, in our vicarages, and in some investments that the church commissioners make. And from the income from that investment, they contribute towards paying stipends a bit, but also to paying pensions. We know that most big organisations now face quite a complex and big bill on pension payments. Now, if you're very young, our lovely young questioner, you may not be worrying about pensions yet, but it's part of our fact of life. Most churches now, however, in their everyday life, depend on their functioning on the money that is given week by week by the members of the congregation who go there. There is no government programme for maintaining churches. Most of our listed buildings are churches, Church of England churches. And you know, you see villagers or townspeople, a small group quite often, who themselves are responsible for maintaining and keeping in good repair these wonderful buildings that we have. So there is wealth in our assets, but actually we're not a fat cat organisation at all. Stipend is quite low, and we are relying on the generosity of the people who come to keep our ministry going and to keep our beautiful buildings in a state of good repair.
And many people in the community use those buildings very much too.
That's what we long to have happen.
Yes.
I think it's so sad if a church is only used on a Sunday. So we want to be able to develop our buildings so that they are of use and a treasure for the whole community.
And here's a question I've been asked by one of our older listeners, who said exactly, how can we get people back into church?
This is another really good question. I think we're getting wisdom here from our young people and our older people. As I've gone round, in my first 6 months in the diocese, I've gone round and visited all the deaneries of our diocese, and I've met with a lot of people. And this is the question I get asked most. The next most asked question is, how can we get young people back into our church? Yes. And it's older people, I think, that sense, what's going to happen when we're not here anymore?
Yes.
Because it's undoubtedly true that our congregations are older than the general population. First thing to say is we need to treasure our older people. And so we want to continue to serve them and meet their needs. But we also need to be reflecting on not just how do we get people back into church, but how do we talk about God in a way that touches the lives with a sense of reality for people who've never been near a church. Because increasingly now, people are not brought up, just as I wasn't brought up in a church family, people now are not often brought up in a church family. So we need to find ways not of alienating people by a rather kind of, you know, people knocking on your door trying to convert you, but how do we speak to people about faith, about our conviction in the reality of God, our conviction that love is stronger than evil through God. Life is stronger than death. Evil and death don't have the last word in our world. And when we discover the reality of God, helping people to respond in love to that reality, you can't really do that on your own. You need to become part of a worshipping community. But we need to make sure that our worshipping communities are like the one that I found, which is warm, welcoming, lively, in touch with the lives of people nowadays.
Now, Bishop, I want to ask you a bit of a crazy question of my own. Hospital Radio has served the North East for many years. It cares for junior doctors and nurses as well as the patients, and they care for our NHS. Do you think it would be a good idea to invite Jeremy Hunt to shadow one of our junior doctors in accident and emergency so he gets to gain a better understanding of their situation?
I think that's a really interesting idea, Sheila. And I have to say, I think I would support it.
Really?
I think that all of us could do with learning more about areas of life for which we're responsible, but we haven't really experienced. And I think about companies, firms, organisations, where there are some companies where people are brought in at the top without having ever experienced what it's like to work on the factory floor, for example. Mm. And I have an inclination that very often it's people who come up through the company and have an experience of life that make the better decisions mm. when they're in positions of authority. Now, for Jeremy Hunt, he's not now going to go up through the whole, you know, process of being a medical student, etc. But I think it really would be quite helpful if he could experience that. I remember when I was training for ministry that one of our fellow students did a placement working as a hotel chambermaid. And what she told me and told us about the life of a hotel chambermaid, I have never felt the same about staying in a hotel since. I now think about the person who cleans my room.
Yes.
And so my perception was changed. And I think Jeremy Hunt's perception could well be changed.
Do you think he could bring a few millionaires along with him? Because
well,
that would be a good idea, a few trillionaires along with him, just to experience that too.
I think this getting in, we talk about being someone, standing in someone else's moccasins, don't
That's
we?
Exactly right, yes.
And beginning to understand both the joys and troubles that we experience in our different lives.
Yes.
I'm all for it.
Great, especially. Bishop, do you have anything to say to listeners who may have experienced the bitter sting of rejection because of their sexual orientation?
I think this is one of the saddest things, Sheila, and I know it has happened, and I know it is happening. As you and I know, we have in part been faced that sense that as women, we are not quite equal as, you know, daughters of God, and we've had to struggle with the hurt that causes. So I apologise from the bottom of my heart to any gay, lesbian, transgender people who have faced the sense that they are being rejected and somehow seen as not quite sons and daughters of God because of their sexuality. God creates all of us in the whole of ourselves and loves us not despite who we are but because of who we are. And that includes he loves us because of our sexuality, not in spite of our sexuality. And the most important truth at the heart of our faith, our Christian faith, is that each and every one of us carries the stature and dignity of being a son or daughter of God.
Finally, I'd like to ask Bishop Christine, do bishops have ups and downs at all? And what is it that keeps you personally upbeat and ready for action?
They certainly do, Sheila, or at least this bishop does. Of course, there are days that it feels wonderful and fantastic and other days when it's hard and there's a sense of personal failure, all kinds of things that we all have. For me, I have a real sense of God's grace. I am so aware of my inadequacy for this task that I know that without God's grace, it just wouldn't be possible. I have a firm belief I've been called to it, and I know that God will supply the grace I need to fulfil it. So prayer and getting back in touch with that sense of God's love and grace and call is really important. But also, we experience God's love through other people. And my family are a great sense of joy and support to me, and my friends. And that's just very special to know that there are people there who know you exactly as you are, and they love you anyway.
Yes. Thank you so much, Bishop, for setting time aside to be with us today. And may we wish you every success for your future ministry, and also in achieving all that God has laid on your hearts for this area here in the Northeast. Many people listening to this broadcast are listening from hospital beds. Do you have a few final words and a blessing for them, please, before you go?
My dear brothers and sisters, I'm holding you now in my prayers, and my prayer is that you will be touched by such a strong sense of God's love for you, and I pray for God's healing power in your lives, and may the blessing of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit be upon you now at this moment and remain with you always. Amen.
Your final choice for us today, which song or hymn and why?
My final choice is another favourite hymn of mine, Guide Me, O Thou Great Redeemer. First of all, for no other reason that I'm half Welsh, so I really love it.
Didn't know that.
But also, I love the sense of God being with us through our journey, through the whole of our lives, until that final moment when we pass through this life into the new life of eternal life. It's a wonderful hymn.
Thank you. Thank you once again, Bishop, for being with us. Enjoy the rest of your day. You've done very well answering some very difficult questions.
Thank you, Sheila.
Thank you for listening to New Day Dawning. Please join with us again next week. Bye for now.